Hey, St. John. Welcome to the Post Sermon Podcast. I am Deaconess Dahlia, and with me today is Vicar Tim.
Hello.
How are you doing today?
Oh, I'm doing well. How are you?
Doing well. We are going to be discussing your sermon from this past Sunday. Tell us, what is the text that you preached on?
So I preached on John 6, 1 through 15. This is the feeding of the 5,000 in John, where Jesus goes up a mountain with his disciples. A great crowd follows them. Jesus is concerned about their well-being. Where are we going to buy bread for all these people? And he ends up miraculously feeding these even more than 5,000, thousands of people. There's 5,000 men plus women and children. And he feeds them all with just 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish.
And what was the central teaching of your sermon?
So my central teaching is that Jesus performs miracles in the Gospels, and that they ultimately point us to the greatest miracle, to the resurrection. That in these miracles, we are in a sense often being pointed to the great miracle, the miracle that's going to affect each and every one of us. That Jesus' resurrection will affect us. That we have a promise from God that he will raise us from the dead on the last day, and that just like Jesus was raised from the dead, we too will be raised and we will never die again.
So let's talk about a little bit about how you went about your sermon. A question you had asked at the beginning was, how do we approach miracle stories in the Gospels? And you talked about 2 different approaches, right?
Yeah, so start out with almost like two approaches that we shouldn't take. We shouldn't just explain away miracles, like trying to find rational, logical, or scientific ways to explain how Jesus might have done this. The example that I had come across was that the feeding of the 5,000 was just Jesus, his example of sharing the 5 loaves and the 2 fish inspired everybody else in the crowd to share the food that they had already brought themselves, and thus, Jesus doesn't actually do a miraculous multiplication of the bread and the fish. Instead, he just inspires people to give.
So did you read that explanation online?
Yeah, that's where, okay, I'd come across it. I think I'd even come across it at some point previously, but I did find it again online on a little Google search. And certainly it's, in a sense, you can almost see why it may be attractive to someone, because it even has a nice little moral teaching to go along with it.
To share the food that you've been given.
Yeah, okay. It could then be twisted to teach us, oh, you should be sharing and being generous. As I laid out, that kind of moves the focus of the miracles away from Jesus, away from what he's doing, and onto us, onto our own actions. Miracles become less about what Jesus is doing and who Jesus is, and more about what we should be doing. And that, just in general, when we read the Bible too much like that, it almost becomes a little bit of a works righteousness, and that it becomes about my works and not about the works that Jesus is doing for me in the Bible.
Yeah, no, I really agree with that. I think that's a huge danger, is that the focus then gets off of Jesus and his divine power and now on us and what we need to do. I also wonder, you had mentioned just how the greater purpose of these miracles are that it points to Jesus and who he is, and so in the greatest miracle that he has done for us, which is his resurrection. So would that then get us to doubt the resurrection? Like, would we, you know what I mean? Like, if we're going to be doubting the smaller miracle of Jesus, would we see Jesus' resurrection for what it really is, or maybe believe in more of a spiritual resurrection, or I don't know.
Yeah, I absolutely think so. If we're going to be logical and rational and scientific about it, you can't bring someone back from the dead who's been in the tomb for 3 days. Like, there's just no scientific explanation for that. It has to be miraculous. So if you're undermining all of Jesus' other miracles, I think you are eventually going to undermine the resurrection itself.
So that's the first way we can wrongly approach miracles, as we explain away them. What about the other approach to miracles?
Yeah, so the other one was that we would just, I guess, kind of say, oh, it's a nice story, but it just doesn't have anything for me.
That this happened for someone else a long time ago.
Yeah.
What does this have to do with me?
Yeah, that we can just kind of ignore them or set them aside and just be like, oh, nice story, but whatever. And that feeling comes out of the fact that, well, a lot of times we don't see miracles in our own lives. And I kind of laid out ways in that, you know, we might want or expect a miracle, or, you know, the problem, you know, not everybody gets their daily bread. And that can cause resentment towards God. But then as I kind of laid out that, I mean, all those miracles in the Bible, they don't really permanently fix the problem, do they? People still go hungry even after Jesus feeds them.
I was about to say, I mean, the feeding of the 5,000 obviously was amazing, but the people were, I'm sure, hungry the next day.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it was a temporary fix. Yeah.
Yeah, they ate their fill then, but, you know, what about the next day? They're going to be hungry. The sick people, they're going to get sick again. Even when Jesus raises people from the dead in the Bible, Lazarus isn't still walking around on this earth to this day. He died again sometime. If we just look at the miracles as, well, I need a miracle in my own life, I was thinking, in some sense, it's kind of forgetting that the miracles don't fix the problem permanently.
Yeah, so miracles don't fix the problem permanently. And I know you got a little bit into this at the beginning. So then how does Jesus fix the problem permanently?
Well, he fixes the problem by rising from the dead. That his resurrection is a resurrection where he doesn't die again. He ascends into heaven. He's still there. His body, he's still living in heaven. And one day he's going to return. He's going to raise us up from the grave. And that's the miracle that will ultimately fix everything, because we'll be dwelling with him in the new creation, and there'll be no more need for miracles, no more little fixes, because everything's been fixed. There's going to be no more hunger, no more pain, no more suffering, no more death in the new creation. Everything's going to be as it should be. And so the miracles in the Bible, they help point us to that ultimate great miracle, and that's the miracle that we will experience.
Yeah, I like that. They are, Jesus' miracles are a small glimpse into what the new creation will be.
Yeah.
As well, right? Like he's, you know, we see him temporarily fixing hunger in that one, or he, you know, heals a blind man or raises one man from the dead. And we get just like a little glimpse, just like we get a foretaste of the new creation in communion as well, right?
Yeah.
And so in that way, right, like the miracles that we read about in the New Testament, like they are for us, like they may not be happening now in present day, fixing our problems like the way we want to, but ultimately, yes, like these are for us, right?
Yeah.
Found through Jesus. And just like you said, yeah, Jesus rose from the dead, and then because we have been united to him in our baptisms, that means we're going to rise too one day.
Yeah.
And that all of that will be given to us in the new creation.
Yeah, absolutely.
And something else I really like that you, well, I guess two things you mentioned. You mentioned how the resurrection is miracle number 8,
uh-huh.
Right? And why is that significant? That's number 8.
Yeah, because, 7 days of creation. And so sometimes the number 8 is often associated with the new creation, going beyond the original creation. So the resurrection points us ahead to our own resurrection on the last day, pointing us ahead to the new creation.
And I am curious, and I'll bet you there's other people that were curious as well in your sermon. What was miracle number 9?
Miracle number 9 is the miraculous catch of fish after Jesus' resurrection.
That's right, yeah. And then, okay, one other thing I really liked about your sermon was you talked about picturing the gospel writers as florists that are carefully arranging flowers, and they're like putting together their gospels into this beautiful, intentional arrangement. That's really cool. Had you read that somewhere, or had you thought of that?
It was something that it kind of just kind of come to mind. It was There was another image that had kind of been suggested to me that was along the similar lines, but then as I was thinking about more, I thought the florist imagery I thought really, really worked well, and it's a very visual one, and it is a very intentional thing. You know, flowers aren't just arranged haphazardly, they're intentionally placed. So too, the Gospels aren't just being arranged haphazardly, or even in some cases, they're not even being arranged strictly chronologically. They're being arranged in the ways that the Gospel writers want them to be arranged, to tell their story. Each writer has its own kind of story about Jesus that he's portraying, and yeah, they are putting together intentionally.
Yeah, and so Gospel of John. So John is intentionally doing this. And I mean, I think with the numbers is a great example of that.
Yeah, that doesn't seem accidental.
Yeah. Yeah, because you get different, I mean, sure, a lot of the miracles you'll see in the different Gospels, but then there are some aren't mentioned or other, you know. John was intentional about which ones he wrote about. Like they were part of, like you said, that arrangement of his purpose of when he was writing. And that wasn't all of Jesus' miracles, yeah. You know, right?
Yeah. So I guess especially because in John, like he doesn't really give us, like, you know, Matthew, Mark, and Luke tend to give, like, oh, Jesus went around the country healing many types of things. You get that kind of image quite a bit in those Gospels. John basically just tells the miracle stories that he tells, and he never really details any other things, or only once he really will mention, oh yeah, Jesus was healing a bunch of people. Otherwise, it's just, he just gives the miracles that he wants to include and doesn't give the kind of sweeping, generic types of, you know, Jesus healing people the way the other Gospels tend to do.
Yeah, no, I think that is really interesting. And I love the Gospel of John. And so I love what you're saying, and just John's intention and his purpose there. Is going to be different than Matthew, Mark, and Luke.
Yeah.
Something else I wanted to bring up was, you know, you look at the lectionary for that past Sunday, and the reading we had in the Old Testament goes together really well with the Gospel,
oh,
right?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah, do you want to just briefly give us a summary of what that Old Testament was reading
yeah,
was?
Yeah, so the Old Testament reading is, people of Israel are in the wilderness during the Exodus. They've left Egypt, and, well, as they do all throughout the Exodus, they're complaining because they have no food. And so God miraculously sends bread from heaven, the manna that feeds the people in the wilderness for the entire 40 years until they enter into the promised land. So this reading isn't very intentionally paired with Jesus feeding the 5,000, because Jesus often does miracles that reflect Old Testament stories. So here he's feeding them, the people, with bread, just as people in the wilderness were fed. If you read further on in John chapter 6, the connection becomes even more explicit, as Jesus has further dialogue with those who are seeking more bread from him. And he's basically saying, believe in me.
I am the bread of life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Believe in me and, you know, you'll never be hungry again. And of course they don't understand what he's saying, but, yes, we see all the time that Jesus does miracles that take an Old Testament miracle and a lot of times do them even greater. All right. So in 2 Kings chapter 4, we get the story where Elisha feeds a group of 100 men with a small amount of bread. They don't think, oh, how are we going to feed all of us? And Elisha feeds these 100 people, and they even have leftovers. And that is reverberated in the feeding of the 5,000, except Jesus feeds way more people with less food, and there's even more leftovers. So I think there's a cool connection there in Jesus doing an Old Testament miracle, but he does it even better.
Yeah, and I'm wondering then, I mean, you were explaining how to approach miracles that are in the Gospels, so can we approach these Old Testament miracles in the same way that we're approaching the ones in the Gospels? Because it seems like what you're saying, like they're also pointing to Jesus. If Jesus is reflecting the same, like similar ones.
Yeah, at times they do. At other times, I think the other point that came out of my sermon that's really in the Old Testament ones is God showing care for people, especially people who may be in difficult times or in tough positions, like Israelites in the Exodus, Elijah raising the widow's son. But in all these Old Testament miracles.
All of these are still pointing to what Jesus has for his people,
for the whole world. And the cool thing is that like in these Old Testament miracles, when like the prophets do miracles, like it's very clear that like the spirits of the Lord came upon them and they performed a miracle. In the New Testament, Jesus just does the miracle. He just speaks or blesses or touches the person and the miracle just happens.
Yeah, that's so interesting. I was just thinking about this on Sunday. In my Sunday school class, we were talking about Elijah raising the widow's son.
Oh, yeah.
And what does he do? He lays on the son three times.
Yeah.
And then I was talking about how Jesus raised Lazarus and he just said like, get up, you know,
yeah.
like
just yeah.
so you can kind of see that contrast there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
yeah. So, of course, yeah, the prophet Elijah points to the greater prophet being Jesus.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I think that's really fascinating. And even though your sermon did focus on the gospel reading and more on how John was telling the story, I think it is kind of cool to talk about right now about actually you can look at the miracles and all of scripture and it is telling a very similar thing.
Yeah.
Even if it's maybe a different aspect to it. Well, very good. Well, this wraps up the episode for today. Thank you for listening to our discussion. In case you missed the sermon or you'd like to listen to it again, the link to the sermon is in the show notes. You can also find the sermon on our church website, stjohndublin.org. If you, the listener, would like to submit a question about a sermon, please email us at podcast@stjohndublin.org. Thank you, Vicar, for joining me and for feeding us the word this week.
My pleasure.
Hey, take care, you guys. Bye.
Bye.